Good morning.
Good morning.
What a blessed place this is. I have deemed myself a UU evangelist. I've spoken at a number of churches since I put on the chalice lapel, and I have not been to many places that can match the spirit in this place. And so my cup is already full. I really am ready to go home now. But I guess I should say a few things. I bring you greetings from Davies Memorial Unitarian Universalist Church in Camp Springs, Maryland, in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, in a county called Prince George's County. It is where President Bush takes his flights on Andrews Air Force Base. So that gives you an idea of where I'm from. And I was told that this was Bush country. I thought they were talking about Bush Gardens. But I was corrected. So I better be careful. Jennifer came to my church a few months ago and wowed my congregation, so I don't know what's going to happen today. But I do know one thing. You got a good deal with Preston and Jennifer. Ain't that right? So it was about 5 years ago, 2001. I finished seminary in 2000. I realized when I finished seminary that I was not a United Methodist. $40,000 of post-theological school debt. And as you can imagine, I was depressed. My wife and I had been analyzing different religions with a book, Leo Rostin's Almanac, Religions of America. Had gone through almost every religion you can think of, and all of the sales pitches that we heard, none of them sounded right. So I had left my church. I was really mentally and physically ill, felt I was called to do something, not knowing where I was going to go. And my wife came to my office and said, read this. This sounds like what you just wrote about. I had just finished writing my first book. And I looked at the words, Unitarian Universalism. Of course, that was all the way in the back of the book. And when I read those words, the principles, what we stood for, what we believed in, it was like manna from heaven. And the tears immediately flowed that day. And I said right then and there, I'm going to be a Unitarian Universalist minister. We walked into a church in Camp Springs, Maryland. Minister there, Reverend Don Cameron Crott, who's now the minister of the 600-member First UU Church of Providence, Rhode Island. We became instant friends. He said, we should do this together. This is a great place for you to start your ministry. Prince George's County is the only county in America that has the most educated and affluent African Americans in the United States. And so he said, this is the perfect place for you to do what you want to do, because my intent was to find African Americans. I had this sort of notion that I wanted to free people. And so from their theological despair, so to speak. And all I knew was the black church. I grew up in a black neighborhood, went to a black college, Hampton University, right down the street. And so that's all I knew. But when I met good and well-intentioned white folk at my church, my heart was changed. And I said, watching the little girls in my church sing Spirit of Life, my heart was changed instantly. I once was lost, but now I'm found. And I said to myself, I have to commit myself to building a multiracial congregation. Now, my church had no African Americans at the time. But Don and I put together a plan. We asked the UUA to give us $300,000. They laughed. So, what happened? Well, we came up with about $100,000 through the Joseph Priestley District and the Unitarian Universalist Association. We worked hard. Reverend Don worked with me for a while, decided he was going to leave and move his ministry on and allow me to be the senior minister. And our church evolved over a three-year period from 100 members to 150 members, from a few people of color to now we're 37% diverse and just named as a breakthrough congregation with the Unitarian Universalist Association. So, So the thing I realize is that we are a cutting edge faith in a cutting edge time. And a lot of members of my church didn't believe African Americans would come to a Unitarian church. But I said, I'm here, and so I know there are others like me. And the fact is, perception is reality. We do exactly what we want to do in life. And if we believe, and if we make a conscious, deliberate, and determined effort, anything is possible. So I want you to take a ride with me, because I believe that Unitarian Universalism is at the brink, or on the brink of greatness. Take a ride with me back to the 16th century in Europe, and you find story after story about our forebears who were speaking out religiously against the status quo. Religious radicals caught in a place and time that was not quite ready for their universal and inclusive message. You heard an adaptation of John Murray this morning, and Murray, along with George de Binnable, are together known as the founders of Universalism in America in the 18th century. They were caught up in their time in an environment that was dominated by Calvinist dogma. While most of New England and the mid-Atlantic states were preaching hellfire for predestined souls, Binnable and later Murray were run out of town because they were preaching a message of hope, unity, and salvation for all souls. If you jump nearly 100 years in American history, you find yourself in an environment ripe for civil war. And we know many battles were fought in this area, but the union between the North and South was insecure. The major political topic of that time was, of course, the issue of slave labor. The North had long since let go of this notion, but the South was stubborn for many reasons, mostly economics. And so the South kept the institution alive. But nonetheless, around 1859, a man named John Brown traveled throughout the North raising money to fund an ambitious and quite insane idea to raid the federal arsenal in Harper's Ferry. Now, while Brown traveled north, he had many supporters, names you're probably familiar with, like Emerson and Thoreau. And one of his financial supporters, who were a part of a group known as the Secret Six, was Theodore Parker. Now, Brown, as we know, failed in his attempt and was executed for treason. But we were there in history, at the cutting edge, dealing with the major social, political, and economic problem of that time. Although these men were well known and viewed by many as great thinkers, they too lived in a time where the ideas of Protestantism dominated the culture. The North won the war, but America was still young and not ready to hear our message, a Unitarian or Universalist message, that all people are created equal. And now you fast forward nearly 100 years, and you are in the 50s, headed toward the 60s, another tumultuous time in history. We're now in the era of Jim Crow, when segregation and discrimination were overt realities. A. Powell Davies, for whom my church is named, was preaching from his pulpit in All Souls Church Unitarian in Washington, D.C., and he made a list telling his parishioners not to eat at any restaurant that permitted segregation. And later we come to a time of the civil rights movement in Selma, Alabama, where voting rights was a priority. Unitarian and Universalist ministers like Reverend James Reeb and Reverend Clark Olson and Reverend Orloff Miller, among others, answered Dr. King's call to march for justice and for equal rights for African Americans and really all people. The three ministers, if you know the story, were beaten badly by a vicious mob. And unfortunately, Reverend Reeb was killed. But his death was not in vain. It helped to spark the Voting Rights Act in 1965. We were on the cutting edge, my friends. When you jump to the present, you will find that we're still on the cutting edge. But I think what's different now is the environment is ripe to hear what we have to say. While the mainline churches are wrestling, now mainline Episcopal, Methodist, Presbyterian, while the mainline churches are wrestling with the issue of gay, bisexual, lesbian, and transgender rights, threatening to dismantle or split denominations, we have long since been supporters of this community. Issues like separation of church and state, government accountability, and the big one, environmental issues, that certainly can have a huge impact on humanity if we're not careful in the next few years. The war in Iraq, we are right there in the mix, making a difference. Now, from a political standpoint, we make noise. We always have historically. I think I've proven that this morning. But one thing that we have not done, although it is not necessarily evident in this congregation, is we have not reached out enough to grow this faith and let people know who we are and what we believe. I cannot tell you how many times people have asked me, are you a part of the Unification Church? From what I see, we could miss out on our time in history if we do not recognize just how ripe the times are for us as an association to have massive growth. More and more people just like me are asking questions today and seeking new answers. For many, the traditional religious responses are not enough anymore. People are not accepting the notion of being in the closet with their beliefs, but they want to freely live and express not just their constitutional rights, but their religious rights as well. And they are looking for a place that will give them an outlet for their inner feelings. And so we have to see that outreach, not just political outreach, but actual recruitment of new members is a necessary part of our ministry. I just did a workshop some weeks ago, and the workshop was about how to make the congregation more diverse, various congregations. But I asked them an interesting question, because I said to them, how much is your outreach budget? My church's outreach budget is, for 150 members, $10,000 a year. I said, how much is your outreach budget? That's the response I got. So I said, well, if you want to be diverse, just sell the Unitarian message. You don't have to go out and say, hey, would you please come to our church? No, you don't have to do that. Just let people know who you are and what you believe, and we will make the new heavens and new earth a reality. That's all we have to do. But there are trends that tell me we are at the brink of greatness. If you look at the numbers of those mainline churches, you find drastic and consistent declines in membership. When you look at the Catholic Church, you find a watering down of the faith, so to speak. More and more, Catholics are becoming inclusive regarding women, sexuality, and acceptance of other faiths. Now, there was a time in history where Catholicism would not fathom the idea of being tolerant, for lack of a better term. But today, they are working with Protestants in ecumenical circles. And I say to you, when the granddaddy of them all is changing, all of Christendom will change. There are also obvious signs that the culture's religious psychology is changing. Some time ago, I scoured the internet, and I found, I guess, some reliable research. At least it said what I wanted it to say. Yeah, that's how research works, you know. From the Barna Research Group in Ventura, California. The numbers say that over 70 million of the 300 million Americans are unchurched. And that means they haven't been to a church in a year or more. So the numbers support my claim that people are perhaps dissatisfied, indifferent, or looking for a new form of religious expression. Now, Barna research also indicates that only 7% of Protestants have a biblical worldview. Biblical worldview means that an absolute moral truth exists and it is found in the Bible. Also, the research indicated that 64% of Americans said truth is relative to the situation. And 57% said they were not satisfied with their church. And lastly, Barna research found that the more liberal the viewpoint, the more likely the person will be unchurched. Again, this research tells me that the time is ripe for the Unitarian Universalist message. In substance, it is our history and the trends in the religious psychology of Americans that confirms we should be a major force religiously in the 21st century. And we should see astronomical growth as a result of the climate in America. This, my friends, is our time. In an age of liberal free thinking and expression, when technology and scientific genius allows us to access knowledge at the click of a button, we stand as the religion that can embrace both tradition and innovation. This is our time. We stand as the religion that can effectively link the past with the present. For far too long, the liberal religious voice has been quiet and often shallow. We have allowed through fear or indifference the voice of fundamentalism to speak for the majority when it really speaks for the minority. The numbers indicate that most people in their daily lives, if you talk to them one-on-one, are relatively moderate and liberal in their thinking. Even those who call themselves fundamentalists, when faced with life's decisions, they become what I term selectively fundamental. There's only one religion that I know that embraces the Buddhist and the Catholic. There's only one religion that I know that accepts the Muslim and the Hindu. There's only one religion that I know that accepts the atheist, agnostic, humanist, and Christian, and that is the religion of Unitarian Universalism. Yes, my friends, we are a dangerous religion. I'm reminded of the words of A. Powell Davies, who said, in essence, that we are a religion that proclaims freedom. In other words, you're free to live, free from superstition, free to think outside the traditional box, free to question, free to seek, free to let go of the cultural ignorance and prejudice that creates the us against them mentality instead of the we are together reality. We believe in the inherent worth and dignity of all humanity, in justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. I think it is high time that this world had a heavy dose of what we believe. Well, maybe I've been dogmatic enough, but I need to ask you to give my dogma a few more minutes. Given all that I've said, I don't want you to leave here today seeing our association, Unitarian Universalism, as something of a social club. I do know we love to eat and socialize. I don't want you to see this affiliation or your affiliation with this little church with a few members locally and nationally. I don't want you to see yourself as being associated with anything like that. I don't want you to see yourself as being a part of some obscure religion. I teach at Potomac College comparative religion, and one of my students who visited my church, she said, "Your church seems like the place for religious misfits." Well, she had a point. I am a misfit. But I don't think she used it that way. I don't want you to see yourself as a part of a religion that is for misfits. If you're hearing me this morning, you are part of more than that. You are a part of a movement of consciousness. We are part of a cutting edge movement. And this church is one little church among thousands of churches in America that are a part of this movement. I hope we accept the challenge this morning, because I do think we risk being called misfits if we don't realize our place right now in history. America, the whole world, needs to hear from us. It is clear when you look around at what's going on. There needs to be an antithesis to the present fundamental and narcissistic thesis that is so prevalent. And what is this thesis statement that you hear on the news and read in your newspaper? Well, you know it very well. There's only one way. We only love our own. There's only one absolute truth. There's only one answer. And we already know this is destroying humanity, and it is destroying our environment too, because that psychology translates there too. And I tell you today, this old way must be challenged much, much more by us in the public and private arena. And we as a whole have to move from our hibernation to participation, from our slumber in the woods, actively growing our movement, seeing it as a viable and visible religious option for many who've grown tired of the traditional way. You know, I thought my quest for Unitarian Universalism was something that I would never find. I remember going to my wife and saying to her, "Sharon, I maybe something's wrong with me. Because I don't know, I had these strange beliefs." And she said, "No, you're not strange, you're just special." But trust me, I did not want to be that special. I just wanted a new foundation to build a new land. A new place of fellowship for my ever-evolving beliefs. And I found this faith, and it saved my life. When we signed the membership book, I remember how good that moment felt. And since then, I've seen many others sign the book, and I treasure that moment. I don't know necessarily how you do it. You do it on the first Sunday. Sign the book. But we have this old relic of a book from 1954. It's tattered and torn, but it's a beautiful book, because within its pages are all those who are committed to the movement that we call Unitarian Universalism. And it gives me chills and makes me realize every time I witness someone signing the book that we have a unity together. We have a history together. And we have a cause worth fighting for. And so I would like to contemporize the words of John Murray. I don't think Murray will mind if I put my own postmodern twist to his very fine words. And I would like for this to be a personal charge to this church and to each and every one of you. Go out into the highways and byways of America, in Williamsburg and Hampton Roads and the Tidewater area, where your homes are. Give the people blanketed with a decaying and crumbling faith something of your new vision. You may possess only a small light, but uncover it. Let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of people. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Do not push them deeper into their theological despair, but preach to them your kindness and everlasting love of humanity. My friends, we have a charge to keep. We have a commitment to keep. And we have a destiny to fulfill. Let it be so. Amen. Amen.